Welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm still Grace.
I'm Bob.
And introducing the return of our special guest, Vic Mignogna.
The return.
I was gonna call.
Shouldn't we call this one the Wrath of Vic Mignogna?
I was gonna call it Revenge of Vic Mignogna, but I decided it was told. I was told that didn't play as well with the child audiences.
Oh, how about? I got it. How about the Vickening? Yeah.
Hmm. Well, as
if
long as we don't
horror crowd, we can call it the Vicar Man.
I'm afraid that rhymes with sickening.
Also quickening, and that could be weird.
As long as we don't call it episode 2, Attack of the Vix, I think we'll be okay.
Thank Electric you. Boogaloo.
Thank you for that.
All right, so in case anyone doesn't already know, and if you listen to our show, you should know, but if you skipped an episode or so, Vic Mignogna's Star Trek Continues series premiered a few weeks ago, and the first episode, Pilgrim of Eternity, is now up on their website, StarTrekContinues.com, I believe. It is a
.com. That's all correct.
Yes.
You got it right, Oren.
Before we do any questions about it, I want to get my first impressions. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty rad.
Thank you, guys. We really, I'll tell you, when we premiered it in Phoenix, they put us in a 4,000-seat room. And Ooh. We were kind of scared because we're like, you know, nobody fills a 4,000-seat room unless you're, you know, William Shatner or the entire cast of Next Generation.
And 4,000 people, that's like a mob there.
Yeah. And so
if
we were
not happy.
So we were kind of nervous, you know, we were kind of nervous, kind of worried that, you know, even if 1,000 people showed up, which you would think would be a nice turnout, you put 1,000 people in a room that size and it looks like a, you know, it looks like a failure. So, I can't tell you how enormously blown away and humbled and excited I was when we walked out on stage and the room was pretty much full. We had between 3,500 and 4,000 people at the premiere in Phoenix, and it was just absolutely wonderful.
So you guys were not expecting the room to be filled.
Oh, no, I wasn't. Some other people were. I wasn't.
It's interesting. I just wanted to compare that actually to a little bit of Trek history and with the first couple conventions that were starting to be a thing is that the actors and such that went to the conventions from the original Trek series, when they went to the conventions, they didn't think that they'd be filling seats either. But then...
Yeah.
Behold.
Well,
they
yeah.
Got on stage and they just were blown away.
Exactly. And I have to also say this ballroom where the event was held at Phoenix Comic-Con was the very same room that one year earlier I introduced William Shatner at his Q&A.
Oh man.
And 2 years earlier I introduced Leonard Nimoy. So this room had a lot of significance for me personally, and to see it absolutely, you know, for all intensive purposes, to see it full and for so many people to be excited about what we were doing with very little knowledge of it. You know, I mean, it's a fan series and people traditionally know that fan series are often, you know, not so fantastic, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So to see that kind of turnout in the audience and then to hear them cheer and laugh and gasp and clap for throughout the episode and to see the kind of response it got was absolutely overwhelming. And guess who was sitting in the front row right beside me?
Who?
Nichelle Nichols.
No way!
I was sharing a...
Oh, wow.
I was sharing an autograph table with her in the signing area, and I asked her earlier in the day if she would please come and be our guest, and she said she would. So she came out and sat down in between me and our Lieutenant Uhura for our series.
Oh, man.
And watched the episode with us and absolutely loved it. And then we did a huge autograph session right after, and the episode went live that next day, and it's just been blowing and going gangbusters for the last 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I really liked that you decided to have Uhura singing, because that was something that she did early on in TOS that I thought was a neat character trait that didn't show up again later. And I'm glad you revisited it.
Thank you. I thought that would be a nice touch too, and You know, it's funny about that. Kim Stinger, who plays Uhura, is not a singer. Mm-hmm. And she's a great actress, but she was scared to death about singing that song. And, of course, I wrote the song.
Wait, you said she's not a singer.
No, she's not. Well, she doesn't
consider
herself.
But she has a great voice.
She does, but she doesn't consider herself a singer. And so she was very, very, very nervous about doing it on set in that room with all of those extras. And she did the best she could, and she sounded fine. And then I brought her into my studio after the fact to ADR it, to have a little bit more control over it. And of course, she did a lot better job when there weren't all those people staring at her.
Well, I got to say, when you opened up by saying she wasn't a singer, I was expecting you to reveal that it was a voiceover by somebody else, but she has an amazing voice. I don't see how
she does.
Not a singer.
You guys should write her a note and tell her so. She would love to hear that.
We just might.
I think
do it, Grace. Do it.
Don't tell me what to do, Vic.
Vic Mignogna is daring you or something. You do it.
I feel like this is an assignment we can accept.
Is this how internet feuds start?
Oh, God, please don't say that.
I think we have to go on Twitter for that. I don't think it's a real feud unless we're exchanging angry tweets.
Well, and it can't be a feud if I love you, Grace.
Oh, feeling the love.
So sure, you guys hop on Facebook and look her up, Kim Stinger, and send her a note and tell her that you thought she has an absolutely beautiful voice and great job. She'd love that.
Yeah, that's an assignment we can choose to accept.
And I'm just glad to see Uhura playing more of a pivotal role.
Yeah, I was gonna say it was a pretty good Uhura episode.
One of the things I told Nichelle Nichols was Nichelle. Uhura has quite an interesting little story arc in this episode.
Yeah.
I think you're really going to enjoy it. And you know, she sat beside me the whole episode, just leaning over and grabbing hold of my arm and telling me how much she loved it. And then when Uhura got electrocuted, she looked at me and out loud, she said, "They can't do that." So she really enjoyed seeing Uhura have a much bigger story arc as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. I was a little bit puzzled about why she reached back to touch the control panel, but I assume she left a comm signal on or
something. No, wait a minute. You don't realize? Did you not put that together?
No, I didn't. Why did she do it?
What happened when she died in sick bay?
What fell
out of her hand?
Oh, it was she was reaching back to grab the pendant.
Yes.
Oh, I'm blind. I didn't see it.
Thanks for watching it on a small screen, I guess.
I totally missed that.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I mean, I'm sorry that you missed it because I wanted it to be subtle. I wanted people to think, why the hell would she go back? But then when the thing falls out of her hand, I wanted it to be like, oh shit, she went back to keep that thing safe, and you know, and Apollo sees it fall to the floor and realizes, you know, it brings back a flood of memories of Athena sacrificing to save him. And
no, I mean, it's first of all, that is amazing. Now that I clicked it together, that makes a totally awesome little arc there. And I wouldn't worry about it because I can miss things that are literally staring me in the face.
You go back and watch it again and just look at the console where she starts to reach the area of the console she reaches for, and you'll see the pendant. You'll see the brooch laying there.
Yeah, I think it was probably just because I have such a, like, I just categorize things so much in my mind that I saw it, and my mind was, like, probably just registered it as a light, but because I'm at bad visual processing. But I really like that now that I
was too busy gearing myself up for the whole, oh, damn, it's going to explode thing. Because you know it's going to happen.
I want to tell a real quick, very cute story. So my mom is actually visiting. She's a huge Trek fan, and I'm going to show her the episode later. But I was showing her the website, and she was like, hey, those guys look really cool, and that Scotty looks a lot like Scotty. And I was like, well, that's because that's Jimmy Doohan. And she didn't know, and she was super excited.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, how cool is it that Jimmy's son is playing his dad's role? You know, that's just awesome.
It must be an intimidating role for him to have, though, I gotta say.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, I mean, he certainly knows his dad and knows the role. But at the same time, Chris certainly was aware of the fact that he was stepping into some pretty big boots, if you know what I mean.
Mm, yeah.
And he did a great job, though, and everyone really loves his portrayal of Scotty. And
What's not to love?
Exactly. I'm looking forward to a lot more of that with him.
I would definitely agree. And just for the listeners at home, just to make sure you understand what's going on here, if you haven't already listened to the episode, we're going to get into spoiler country. So I would suggest pausing and going to watch it now.
Pirate.
Come back and listen to us talk about it.
Yes, please.
So, all right. So you've been warned. I've been burning to ask about this, even though I spelled the name completely wrong in my show notes. I want to know about Lieutenant McKenna. Because that character fascinates me.
Dr. McKenna.
Dr. Yeah. McKenna. Tell me about that character.
Well, as you may or may not know, that's played by my fiance, Michelle Specht. She's an amazing, awesome actress. And she wanted to be in the show, of course.
Mm-hmm. And Congratulations, by the way.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. At first, we thought about making her like Yeoman Rand. But then I thought, you know what? Let's make an original character. And so we decided that in the spirit of moving toward Next Generation, why don't we create and introduce this character that is the first experiment with an onboard ship's counselor. And so, you know, she's not a medical doctor. She's not there to work with McCoy, like, from a medical standpoint. She's a ship's counselor. And so that's what we did. We made a new character that is a first ship's counselor.
Because I really liked the insight that she ended up having into Apollo. And especially because I'm so conditioned in watching television to expect the therapist to be wrong. that she ended up having, you know, this insight that at first it was like, oh no, he is just bad, and then it turned out no, he's trying, and she got that from him. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Which makes it all the more powerful when she ends up being the one to pick up the phaser and fire at him.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, because here she's been advocating it for him and you know, defending him, and then all of a sudden she realizes that he's lost control, and you know, that was a very powerful moment for me.
There's a really tangible level of sort of betrayal between the two actors just for that one shot where he's looking at her.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
Now, more on the... Sorry, go ahead, Grace.
I said that hit me. That's just what I wanted to put out there.
Totally did. And there seems to be some friction between her and Kirk. How did you go about directing those scenes?
Well, I told her that it's kind of funny. First of all, let me make this very clear. Mm-hmm. There is not going to be a love relationship between Kirk and McKenna.
I'm excited to hear that. Thank
she you. Is. It is not. Her. That is what everybody expects, and that is not going to happen. Kirk is not going to be involved with her in that way. And the other thing is that when we first were writing the script and Michelle was reading it, she's like, Why does Kirk keep ignoring her and putting her off and kind of dismissing her? And I said, well, sweetie, it's not that he's dismissing her professionally. It's just that he's got bigger fish to fry right now. Mm. This alien has just shown up on the ship. He knows better than anybody how potentially dangerous Apollo is.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have time to make small talk with McKenna. That can happen later. There, you know, it's a priority thing, honey. And so she's like, well, okay. And so when we, and I'll tell you something kind of funny. She's like, okay. And so when we got on set and I was directing that stuff, there's the quick scene where I'm walking down the corridor and she comes running up and says, Captain, I'm anxious to talk with you about, my new position. And originally Kirk was just supposed to say, well, right now, I need you to help Dr. McCoy with our guest and walk away. And as we were setting up, getting ready to shoot that scene, I thought to myself, Kirk should be a little kinder. He should still say, we'll talk about it later, but he should be a little kinder. So at the moment, on the spot, I said to Michelle, okay, look, here's what's going to happen. You're going to come running up and say, Captain, and I'm going to say, yes, Dr. McKenna, welcome aboard. Like, oh, yes, I forgot. I promised I'd talk to you. and give you, I'm going to give you a smile and I'm going to welcome you aboard. And you're going to say, I'm anxious to talk about this new position. And I'm going to say, of course you are. Yes, of course you are. But for the time being, I need you to help Dr. McCoy.
Yeah.
And so basically I diminished, you know what I mean? Decreased. I didn't dismiss her as much.
Right, right,
I made
right.
made it a little bit more like, oh yes, I'm so sorry. Yes. Welcome aboard. I'm a bit preoccupied right now, but we will have that talk later. And it worked a lot better. It made him not look like quite so much of a dick,
mm-hmm.
you know, for dismissing her. And then of course, you know, and then it also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was my first reaction when, it was Kirk, Spock, they're walking into the sick bay. McKenna comes up, and I did think Kirk was really kind of a jerk at that point when he dismissed her like that.
Well, he was like, now's not a good time, Doctor. I mean, and it's not. I mean, come on.
Well, this I gotta wonder. I gotta wonder. It's one thing to be given the brush off by the captain when he's really busy, but you can't help but wonder if it's an entirely another thing to be a good-looking lady and be one of the few ones who gets brushed off by Captain Kirk. You gotta wonder. What did I say? What did I do wrong?
Well,
if you're not into him, it's just kind of like, well, hey.
Everybody else.
Look at this.
Everybody else thinks I'm hot.
I'm a pretty lady.
Yeah, we may or may not, you know, do something that explores a little bit of sexual tension there, because you know Kirk's not stupid; he can certainly see that she's beautiful. But
prioritize.
But you know, I'm thinking that we're gonna make, and we touched on this a little bit in the first episode. But I mean, McKenna is a fiery Irish girl.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
With enormous hair.
Yes.
With gorgeous 60s hair.
Right. I know. Right. And
so jealous.
So we're you know, she's got a very strong personality.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk is not going to, he's not gonna get involved with her in that way. There may be some flirtation, but there won't be. I don't intend for there to be any involvement in that way.
I'm excited to see what you do with adding another female character to the lineup. So yeah.
So we are going to be seeing more of that character.
Oh yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
But again, let me say, and this will probably I'll probably say this several other times during this interview. Story is king.
Mm-hmm.
The story is the most important thing. We are not going to contrive moments for screen time with Uhura, Chekhov, Sulu, McKenna, everybody. The story is going to dictate, you know, where the episode goes.
Yeah, and I was remembering how you said that while I was watching the episode, and I felt like that really came through, and I gotta say I was impressed by that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, look at poor Chekhov.
You stuck to your guns.
Yeah, look at poor Chekhov. I mean, he had a couple of lines in the opening scene, in the opening teaser. Yeah, because he wasn't germane to this particular story.
Nope. He fell in the relevant sword.
Yeah, and I told Wyatt, the young man that plays Chekhov, I'm like, look, dude, I'm, you know, I appreciate you being here, and we're excited that you're part of this.
Mm-hmm.
This particular story does not have a lot of Chekhov, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Now, a future story may or may not, but the story is going to be the most important thing. One of the many problems that fan films fall into is they think, oh, we got to give everybody screen time.
Which doesn't always work out.
We've got to evenly divvy up all the lines and make sure everybody gets a chance on screen. No, no, no. That's not the way you tell a good story. You know, that was something that we kept very, very present.
So what you're telling me is that you guys don't count lines behind, like, off.
Absolutely not.
No, I agree. And I mean, as long as you stick to good stories, you are going to have some that are going to involve those secondary cast members. And when it happens, it'll feel natural.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. In fact, I was delighted that the story I came up with featured Uhura so prominently.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you even think back in the original series, Uhura didn't get a lot of storylines.
Heck no.
There were very, very precious few episodes where Uhura got to do much more than just hailing frequencies open, Captain. And so our Lieutenant Uhura was absolutely elated that she got to do so much in this episode.
Mm-hmm. I do have a small piece of trivia that I wanted to ask for about the Lieutenant McKenna character, because she shoots Apollo, and it's a really good scene. It works really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to know, from your perspective, was she trying to kill him? Was that phaser set on kill?
No.
No? Okay. No.
Listen, where did she get the phaser?
I imagine she grabbed it when one of the security officers dropped.
Exactly. Apollo knocked the phasers out of the security guy's hands, and while Apollo's dealing with Kirk, McKenna picked the phaser up.
Mm-hmm.
Easy peasy. However, security guys wouldn't have their phasers set to kill.
No, they would not.
So it was set to stun, and she probably didn't even know enough about how to use the phaser. She just knew that, listen, Apollo was getting ready to strike Kirk dead.
Yeah.
Enough, reap the rewards of your blasphemy. He was about to strike Kirk, and out of desperation, she's like, I feel kind of responsible for advocating for this guy. I've got to do something. And she just fired, and fortunately just broke his attention and kind of brought him back to his senses that he had lost control. But no, she wasn't intending on killing him at all.
Okay. And there certainly wasn't a right or wrong answer to that. It was just something like that I was kind of curious about, because I love that scene.
No, me too. And don't you love, I love when Kirk walks back to her and takes the phaser out of her hand, and she is trembling like she's never fired a phaser at a human being before in her life. And it was a pure desperation move, and she's like really kind of upset about that, about what she had to do.
I definitely got the impression that she had never fired a weapon in anger before.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I mean, yeah, again, there's, in my opinion, that's probably my favorite scene of the episode. Like, the episode is really good all around, but I love that part of it. Especially, and like, I have to admit, I was half expecting the Kirk being lifted up scene to, like, I was expecting that special effect to look silly, but it looked very nice.
Good. Good, thank you.
It did not distract. It made it looked like he was being lifted up by an invisible force.
You guys made it very simply, and it worked.
Oh yeah, did I tell you guys about that? I did, didn't I?
Well, tell us again. I'm not sure. You mean about the about the effect?
Well, the first, the first shot where you see Apollo raising his finger up and Kirk sliding up the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was just practical. I stood on a couple of apple boxes.
Right, right.
And then pushed myself up the wall, bent my knees and then pushed myself up the wall. But the camera follows me up. But it works perfectly because you can see that I'm 7 or 8 feet off the ground. You can tell by the, by the orange headers above on the walls. And then, Apollo moves his finger over to the middle of the corridor, to the middle of the hallway. And we cut back, and I was standing originally, was standing on a couple of apple boxes and kind of moving my body as if I were dangling. But, of course, my feet were completely stationary because I was standing on something. So our VFX artist basically cut out my legs and then composited them on top of the empty background plate and gave my legs a little bit of floating movement as well, so that it didn't look like I was standing on something.
Looked very clean.
Yeah, it was seamless.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much.
And this may seem simple from your standpoint, but I wanted to know, how did you do the opening sequence where you walked through the cowboy?
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, I love that.
Very simply, we shot the scene with... the whole scene is a green screen sequence, of course. Mm-hmm. But... it's all green screen, and we shot Scotty. We framed the shot as if Scotty was standing beside the cowboy, and then I told Scotty, "Okay, Chris, when you walk on, you're gonna walk right through the area where the cowboy is frozen, and I want you to walk through it, and then turn around and look him over, and then look over at Kirk and go, 'Wasn't she everything I promised her?'" Mm-hmm. And so, he did that perfectly.
That's gotta be fun to do.
And what we did was we shot the cowboy frozen against a green screen plate, and then we cut him out, and then we just composited him in that space, and then when Kirk walks through him and Scotty walks through him, we had our VFX guys make him kind of break up and shimmer a little bit when they walk through him, and then come back together like he was a hologram.
Well, I thought it looked really nifty. And in fact, when I first saw that opening sequence, I thought you were setting up for a Spectre of the Gun sequel.
I love it. That's exactly what we were going for.
I was just like, wait a minute, what's going on? Are they gonna go back to the buildings and they're just gonna be flats? What's happening?
What? We start the episode late?
I know. You know what? When we came up with that idea, I want the first frame of the episode comes up, and it's a pistol, a cowboy pistol pointed at Kirk. I want the audience to go, what the hell am I looking at? What is this? You know, most people would expect the opening shot would be the Enterprise flying through space or Captain Kirk walking onto the bridge. So how much cooler is it to start with some cool Western image that make people go, what in the world am I looking at? And then you get into the scene and you're like, just like you said, is this like part of Spectre of the Gun? Or where are they? Is he on some planet that's a cowboy planet? What the hell am I looking at?
In Star Trek, we get a lot of cliffhangers, not a lot of cliff starters. So,
oh, that's good, Grace. That's very good. Yes.
Yeah. Turning phrases.
I thought that when he cocks the gun, and people are like, you know, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then you hear Scotty go, "Freeze program." Everyone's going to be like, "Oh my gosh, how cool is that? It's a hologram. It's a holodeck.
Neat."
And again, just experimental, but giving a little nod to things that will be standard in Next Generation.
It makes sense to me.
Yep.
I mean, I think even in the animated series, they were experimenting with the holodeck.
As a matter of fact, you're exactly right. They did.
I think they called it the Rec Room or something. Mm-hmm. And of course, it immediately tried to kill them, as is the holodeck's want.
Hope they called it Rec Room, WRECK Room.
Oh, yeah. The Rec Room. Yeah.
All right.
I'll just go now.
So another question I have just from a creative standpoint is, how is it for you to direct and sort of star in the episode? Like doing both those roles at the same time?
Yeah,
well, okay. I got to tell you, that's not my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
I did it because I needed to do it. But I did not feel like I was able to give my best to playing Captain Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Nor was I able to give my best to directing. Because, in fact, I'll be honest with you guys, there were several things as I was editing the episode, there were several things that I missed because I had so many things going through my mind, so many things on my plate, I just simply missed them. And I kicked myself over and over again that I missed these things.
Like, elaborate.
So
Okay, I'll elaborate.
Okay.
Give us a couple just for the interest of time, just like two.
Well, the main one that really upset me, there's the very first scene in the sick bay where they come in, the very first scene where they're talking to Apollo. They just brought him down there from the bridge, right? So he's weak and drained. He's wearing the gold tunic and the wreath of leaves on his head. And then the second sick bay scene where Kirk walks in and Apollo is looking at the viewer. He should have still been in the gold tunic with the wreath of leaves, but Mike Forrest wanted out of the gold tutu. Michael Forrest kept saying, "When can I please take this off?"
It looked drafty.
Well, it was, but at the same time, it looked freaking awesome. and so
you pay.
He kept asking me to take it off, and I acquiesced, and I let him take it off. And from the very moment I started watching that scene, I thought, "Crap, he should have still been. I should have made him stay in the gold tunic with the wreath, and he should have been weaker than he was in the first sick bay scene. He's gotten much older.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost his hair. He's more pale. He should be weaker than he was in the first scene, but he wasn't. He had a little bit more attitude. And when I walked into the sick bay scene, when I walked into that second sick bay scene, I should have done a double take. I should have looked at him with a little bit of surprise that he looked so much older in such a short amount of time. But I didn't. I just walked in and, you know, and he says, many things have changed on your Earth. Many things have not. And I said, well, one thing has changed. I have one less crewman than I did an hour ago. Perhaps you could tell me, you know, how your realm managed to kill one of my men. I should have done the double take. I should have made more of the fact that he looked so much older in such a short amount of time. And I should have kept him in the gold tunic with the wreath of leaves, because it would have been much more impactful for him to be wearing exactly the same thing that he was wearing in the first time we saw him, only he would look much older and more pale. So but I blew it. I had too many things on my mind, and I missed it. No, that's okay. Go ahead, Grace.
If I can switch gears for a second while we're talking about aging and such, let's talk. Could we talk about the final scene for a minute and the de-aging and how you
absolutely.
Guys...
Absolutely.
How did you guys go about doing that?
Well, you want to know something, Grace?
It was really the how'd-they-do-that moment for me.
Well, you know what, my dear? When I came up with this story, before we even shot the episode, I was hunting around Hollywood for a VFX artist that could build us a CGI version of Apollo that looked just like he did in the original episode.
Yeah.
What I wanted was for him to turn around and look exactly like he did in the original episode. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had a guy that said he could do it and would do it. I got him all the materials he needed. We shot the scene out on location where he turns around, and he even had markers on his face. He had blue dots on his face for tracking purposes. Then, my dear Grace, about 3 weeks before the episode was supposed to be done, that VFX artist who had 4 months to do that one shot contacted me and said he wasn't able to do it. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? That's the money shot. I mean, that is the final shot that shows the world that Apollo made good on his promise to Kirk.
That's his he's back moment.
Yeah, that's his redemption moment. That he has been helping these people on this planet all of this time, and he's younger than ever. Mm-hmm. And so I went into emergency mode. And I contacted some of the other VFX artists that were on the team, and I said, I need you guys to do the best paint job on this shot of Apollo you can. I want you to warm his skin tones up. I want you to paint out his wrinkles. Do anything you can to make him look as young as possible.
What a challenge.
And so I basically had three different guys do their own version of that shot. And then I chose the one that I felt looked the best. And literally what it ended up being, it looks great, but what it ended up being was nothing more than a little bit of painting on the shot. You see, because the guy that was originally going to do the effect shot for us asked our makeup people, make him look as young as you can when we shoot it. So do anything you can do to stretch his skin, make him look as young as you can when we shoot it, so it will minimize the amount of work I have to do. So we had an appliance on him that pulled his skin, pulled his face up and back.
Oh God, he had an Ivana Trump job?
Yep. and then, you know, we did the best we could on set, on location. And then he had the little blue dots on his face for tracking purposes. So when the effects guy that was going to do the CGI head wasn't able to do it, and I had to give the shot to these other VFX artists, the first thing they needed to do was paint out the tracking markers on his face. Then they needed to go in and see how else they could soften up the lines and the wrinkles, give his skin a little bit more color, you know, do whatever they could do, darken his eyebrows a little bit, do whatever they could do to make him look as young as possible given the constraints of the shot itself. So, in answer to your question, it wasn't what I had originally conceived, but it turned out good. Because
being none the wiser about that entire process and that hell that you just went through with you know, someone flaking out on you and such, I'm looking at the last shot right now, and I think it still turned out really well.
It did. He looked a lot younger than he did any other time in the episode. And that was what it needed to be.
Yeah. It got the point across.
And you know what the best moment for me was?
What?
Regarding that particular moment, the best thing for me was when we screened this episode, the two times that I have screened this episode publicly with a live audience, the moment he turns around, you could physically hear a gasp from the audience. Aww. That he was – and to me – That was the seal of approval for me. Nice. That the audience's response was, damn, look how much younger he looks. He's been making good on his promise.
Yeah, they were impressed too.
And that's what I was going for. So
you gotta love that physical reaction.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I'm really glad that, you know, even though I could feel my gut like clench up when you said, you know, 4 weeks before he called and said he couldn't do it.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it was like I was sweating.
Ah, jeez.
But I was like, you know, you can't. I mean, if we, just so you understand, I spent a ton of money to shoot that last scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean, if you think about it, that last scene is on location, right?
Yeah.
You can see it's on location. It's out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, the cart. That is a period, old, like period, middle ages kind of a cart.
Yeah, that can't be easy to work with.
Those aren't just laying around. I had to rent that. Then, did you notice the horse?
I assume, right? was it a real horse?
Yes.
Yeah, it looked like one.
Yes, of course it was. Horses aren't free.
Oh, geez.
So my point is, and then there were the costumes. The old man and the young boy and Apollo were all wearing indigenous costumes to that planet.
Yeah, they had some makeup going on too there, didn't they?
And makeup. So now you're talking about a ton of work to execute that one final sequence on location. And here was the problem. If Apollo doesn't look considerably younger when he turns around, what's the point?
Yeah.
So I was facing cutting the entire last scene. There would be no epilogue.
Ah.
It would have just had to have ended with the Enterprise flying away like it did, and the camera would not start moving in toward the planet and then dissolve into 1 year later on the planet. We couldn't use that scene. Because it would serve no purpose if he didn't.
That would simply not do.
Right. So I was facing the prospect of having to throw away that entire location shoot if we couldn't get that last shot to work.
Jeez.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that I was really glad you got it to work, that you were able to put in that amount of work for it to happen, because it really, you know, we already said it ties the episode together.
Yeah, me too. Well, yeah. I, you know, as an audience member myself. When they're standing in the transporter room and Kirk says, you're going to have plenty of opportunities to practice that newfound gift of yours. And Apollo says, and I'm going to do it with all my heart. I swear it. And then they go back up on the bridge and they have their lighthearted moment and they fly away. I, as an audience member, would wonder, I wonder if Apollo is going to make good.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to go down there and people are going to start worshiping him and he's going to. Are they setting this up for another comeback episode? Or what's the deal? And so as the exec producer, director, story writer, I wanted to say, you know what? This story is the redemption of Apollo. And he said he was going to make good. And I want the audience to feel, I want them to know that he made good on his promise to the Enterprise crew.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It worked, is all I can say to that.
Yep.
I want to ask, since... Oh, sorry, Grace.
You done good.
Thanks, Gracie.
I want to ask, just because I know what my favorite part of the episode is, from watching it, what's your favorite part?
Yeah.
Wow. I do. I do really love the moment that McKenna fires on him,
mm-hmm.
and that tilt up from the phaser, where it tilts up and she's standing there, trembling in tears. Because, you know, 3 minutes earlier we heard her advocating for him and standing up for him, and that he's, I believe him, Captain. I believe he's changed. I believe it. He's sincere. And then she finds herself having to fire, and that in context with the music. And I also loved Apollo's song.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was a really neat moment. That was a very tender moment. I really loved when Uhura, gets electrocuted, because it kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone was expecting it. And suddenly to see her dead and to think, oh my God, it happened so fast. You know what I mean? They didn't make any big, huge story out of it. It just happened so unexpectedly and fast. And when Apollo sees her drop the brooch and stands up and decides to help her, I just love all of those moments. I love those moments.
Just from a small standpoint, I really appreciated the fact that Scotty warned them that there was going to be an electrical surge.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just like everyone's working and, oh God, an electrical surge. We had no way of knowing that was going to happen.
No, an electrical surge. They'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And, and I wanted the audience, when you see Uhura step away from her station and then she starts to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets electrocuted. I wanted the audience to go, what the hell did you go back for, Uhura? Why in the world
did
you go back when he just told you about the danger? And then when she dies and her hand goes limp and that brooch drops out of her hand, I want them to go, oh, shit. She went back to get the brooch. Oh, my gosh. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
I have another question. What was it like to be working with Michael Forrest? Because he obviously, he has that, that Star Trek lore behind him. How was he to work with?
It was absolutely fantastic. He was the consummate professional. Mm-hmm. I got to tell you guys something. He had a lot of lines in this episode.
Yep.
And do you want to know? He was on his lines. That guy is 83 years old, and he showed up with all of his lines memorized like a true professional. Oh. And we had so much fun. I don't know if you guys have been watching any of the behind the scenes stuff or keeping up with any of the stuff that's been put up, but there have been a regular release of behind the scenes videos and stuff. We had so much fun. He had the time of his life. He had retired.
Mm-hmm.
He was done acting. And we got him to come down and play with us. And his wife, of course, played Athena.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was his wife, Diana. And
fitting name.
Yeah, right? In fact, we were going to make her Artemis.
Yeah.
Because Artemis in Greek is actually Diana.
Yeah.
And we were going to make her Artemis, but Artemis was his sister. And I just wanted to make it – I wanted it to be Athena. So – but anyway, she did that for us. But they had such a wonderful time. Everyone loved them to death. We laughed. He had this running gag where he would, right out of nowhere, right in the middle of a scene, Mike would yell, Vic, make me a sandwich.
Good times.
Like he was some kind of, like he was some kind of senile old guy going, make me a sandwich. And he would always yell it, and we just laughed. And I was constantly hugging on the guy, and we just had the best time.
Well, an old actor's friend of mine once told me, what's the point of retiring if you can't break out of it every now and then?
Good point. Well, he had a wonderful time, and then he and Diana actually came to the premiere in Phoenix.
Ooh.
That's
they were actually there, on hand to see it. And I mean, he was like reborn, with all of these Star Trek fans, having him there.
Raised. Of course he was powerful again.
Exactly.
Well, no, Grace, he had that organ taken out. That's not a thing anymore.
That's right.
Maybe he had the power all along.
He's been neutered.
There's an unfortunate thought.
Okay. So since we're on that topic of having the organ removed and the power coming from the sacrifice thing, how did you guys come up with, because that's sort of the central like theme of the episode and sort of the message at the end. And
yeah.
That was really fascinating. How did you guys come up with that? What was the process?
Well, you know, I have to be honest with you. I mean, that was completely my story. Mm. And I'll be honest with you. I don't really know how I did. I will.
It's like that.
Well, let me say this. As you guys may or may not know, I'm a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
I make no bones about it. I'm not ashamed of it. I don't hesitate to tell people that. And I was just thinking of Star Trek-like themes.
Yeah.
What are themes that we would hope humanity would have learned by the 23rd or 24th century?
Well, there's definitely some very Christian ideologies in Star Trek. So I
well, there certainly that. There certainly are, and the whole idea of self-sacrifice,
yeah,
giving of oneself for the good of another,
yeah,
is a very Christian theme, mm-hmm, obviously, and so I knew that Mike Forrest was open to doing an episode, so then I just started kind of racking my brains, what would that look like. And I came up with the idea of this place where the gods went when they left Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And because Apollo was the last one to arrive, he was one of the last ones still alive there. And basically, the only way Kirk would ever let him stay on the ship or not just, you know, beam him into whatever would be if he promised that he had learned his lesson, that he wasn't going to try to get worship.
Mm-hmm.
He learned his lesson, and all he wanted now was not to die alone. He wanted to live out what was left of his life around humans, because they established very clearly in the original episode that they loved the humans.
Mm-hmm.
The gods loved humanity. And
interesting to see the god kind of repenting at the end.
Well, exactly. And I thought, what a better Star Trek theme than for this quote-unquote god to learn that he can gain life energy and life sustenance out of sacrificing for others just as much as he could out of subjugating others.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, for an advanced race to learn something like that from the humans is such a classic Star Trek idea. And you know, I just kept reworking it, and once I got the story broken down and split up into acts the way I thought it should go, I handed it off to some writers, and they turned it into a script, and they sent it back to me, and then I rewrote some of it and reworked some of it and gave them some notes, and we kind of went back and forth until we had a script that we liked.
That's really, really cool. I have a tiny follow-up question, then I will let Bob and Grace ask some questions, because I asked questions. So, tiny follow-up question. At what point did you decide, because in the original episode, Apollo was channeling all of his power from this temple machine that he had, and in this episode, he was channeling power directly from being worshipped, which I really like, and it's a cool idea. At what point did you decide to like sort of add that in?
Well, if you think about it,
mm-hmm,
they did establish in the original episode that he had an extra organ in his body. And they even said, do you think it's what he uses to channel, you know, the energy from the temple through his body?
Mm-hmm.
So they established that the organ was involved in the channeling of energy.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Just excuse me for a second.
Okay.
Her parole officer's calling again.
We were keeping that a secret.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Gosh, Vic.
That's right. Well, she shouldn't have taken that ankle, that locator off.
That's a good point.
Anyway, so they already established that the organ was partially responsible for channeling power. from Temple. And if you think about it, he didn't really do anything in this episode that was nearly as powerful as what he did in the original episode.
He was kind of downplaying his power, really.
Oh, exactly. So the little bit of showing off, if you will, that he did was, you know, blowing Kirk down the hallway and then lifting him up and suspending him over the corridor. But nothing to the degree of the original episode. So my strategy, my thinking was he wasn't as powerful, anywhere near as powerful as he was in the original episode, but he still was able to draw energy from the worship of the people in the rec room. And it went to his head, intoxicated him, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And was converted into energy that he actually used to strike Kirk.
I was so excited when I saw that first scene of him, like, starting to tell a story to the rec room people. I was like, I know where this is going.
Oh, really? Did you? Yo, I love it. I love it.
Well, I've always loved the idea of gods being powered by the belief of their worshippers. Like, I'm a huge Neil Gaiman, Terry Pratchett fan.
Right.
Okay, so I've asked a bunch of questions. Bob, do you have questions you want to ask?
I do, but they're definitely much more of a looking forward. But I think I want to start it off with an email, actually. I sent you, Vic, about a week and a half ago or so. If you don't mind, may I read it?
Sure, go ahead.
All right, so, hey, Vic. I just finished watching Pilgrim Eternity on YouTube. There are so many things that have been accomplished here that I can say with confidence that will distinguish Star Trek Continues as a truly worthy continuation of the original 5-year mission. I won't go into detail on what those things are, as you and the rest of the team clearly have a good grasp on that magic. I wouldn't want anyone to become self-conscious of those things and potentially become anxious about those qualities. I will say this. There is no time other than when I first saw Star Trek when I was a little kid that I've been as inspired about Star Trek as I am now after having seen this fine production. I'm a little misty-eyed. True story. I'm a little misty-eyed even still thinking about it, where this can go, where this will surely go. Please pass on my compliments to the team that this whole enterprise is true to the Star Trek that started it all and has made it the cultural keystone it is today. And I meant every word of that.
I am humbled and honored by that email, too. I want you to know. And if I may say, the singular most common thing that we heard, that we have been and are hearing from people that have seen it is, I felt like I was a kid again watching Star Trek with my dad. Aww. Or I felt like, you know what I mean?
Incredibly rewarding.
I know. There is no price tag you could put on that. People have responded to it and embraced it so much. And that is literally the most common thing that we've been hearing from people, that it totally took them back to what they loved about the original series and to a time in their lives when they first discovered it and fell in love with it. And I mean, there is no higher compliment that you could pay our production than to say that. And that is our goal. That's what we were shooting for. That's what I've always wanted to do since I was young, and that's what we hope to continue to do.
Yeah. So my question now, on top of all this, I'm not going to ask questions about, you know, kind of what your production team is doing or anything like that, or, you know, the actors' mannerisms, you know, who's portraying their characters correctly or anything like that. I think everyone's got a lock on that. I think everyone's got it figured out. I think the production crew has it figured out. You have it figured out, you know, and really just pointing more of that stuff out, I feel, will make you guys self-conscious. I don't want that, because this is so good, what you guys have going on, that I just want you guys to continue. I just want you guys to keep doing it, is all it is.
Thank you.
So now the question being is, what's next? What do you got for me? You know, can you take my money now? Can I still come hold a boom mic for you in Florida in the what I'm sure is hot studio?
You know, well, it's only hot, you know, if you shoot in the hot months. We our next episode is slated to shoot in late October, and I actually had a conversation today with the guy who's writing the script, I'm certainly not going to give any details away, but it's a cool script idea. It's a very cool idea. And I will tell you that I've got three or four really awesome ideas for future episodes, but what I need to find are writers. I need to find people who know and understand what it was that made the original series so endearing and so great. And I need to give them these ideas and say, here, write this script. Here's the story. Write this. Turn this into a script. I've got three ideas right off the top of my head that I'm so excited about and I can't wait to shoot, but they need to be turned into script form.
Oren, this is your cue to do something.
Well, hey, listen, I'll tell you this. I'm open to wherever it comes from. The problem is, and I'm not speaking about you, Oren, but a lot of people...
It's okay, Vic. We all know who you're talking about.
No, I'm not speaking about anybody in particular, but I have been finding, I've been sent a lot of scripts. And it's just a sad truth. Mm. People don't get the original, that writing for the original series is very unique.
Yep.
I've gotten a lot of scripts and they're interesting and all, but they don't grab you in a visceral action / drama way like the original series did. They're too cerebral. Or they just talk too much. Mm-hmm. Or people are just walking around discussing a conundrum. There's nothing compelling. And my biggest fear, literally, my biggest fear is we have everything now that we need to make great episodes except stories. My biggest fear is that we're going to be held up in shooting because it's a lot harder to find TOS type stories than you would think.
Yeah.
There are tons of fan fictions and fan scripts.
It's there.
But that's not what we're making.
Right.
I mean, I've gotten scripts where the people that wrote them are constantly like having the characters reference old episodes.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Spock, you're behaving the way you did in that episode where the so-and-so did. No, 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 no. We're not going to do fan. It's not about fan service. It's not about fan service and being fans. It's about great, great writing and stories that are compelling and the passion and the drama and the pathos and all of it, the things that made the original series so awesome.
I'm so glad you said that. And the reason being is that we're seeing, the trend with Trek as we've seen with the JJ stuff is let's go ahead and throw in all this stuff that has been in like the past of Star Trek and see what comes out.
Right. Right.
You know, so I'm glad that you are committed to getting, unique, stuff in there. I mean, despite the fact that this first episode you put out there was bringing back an older character, it was still a new, fresh story.
Well, right, and the theme was completely new.
And it was told in a way that people who hadn't seen the original episode that it was following up would, get what was going on and not feel like they had missed something huge.
Right, 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 right. That's exactly what
we were... It stood alone. It stood on its own very well.
Thank you. Thank you for that. But now... Now moving forward, the challenge is to find more good stories. And I mean, like I said, it's just not as easy as you would think.
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, most of the stories that I think up, I end up realizing are either TNG or Deep Space Nine stories. Writing for TOS is difficult.
It really is. In fact, I mean, and to be honest with you, Next Generation was not, how do I say this? Next Generation was different than TOS.
Very different.
Definitely.
There was a lot more talking. There was a lot more. It was much more of a cerebral series. And not as, you know, not quite the same flavor. And
yeah, I imagine it's really difficult to go back to that original series feel without, you know, unintentionally bringing back some of the later series' stuff.
Well, that's true as well. That's true as well. And, you know, the original series, a lot of it was based upon, social issues of the day,
mm-hmm.
moral questions, ethical questions. And while it is true that there are certainly plenty of ethical questions and moral questions and social issues of our day, there are those to deal with. The original series and all the subsequent series really did a good job at addressing a lot of those. So you find yourself in a really difficult predicament of not wanting to redo something that was already, you know, redo a subject matter that has already been addressed. Therein lies the challenge.
Yeah, I think you summed it up pretty well. We are coming to the end of the hour. We promised we wouldn't keep you for longer than that. I do want to give Grace one more chance to ask a question, because Bob and I have got to ask our favorite.
How am I going to follow up Bob's big heartfelt thing there?
You just do. you just do it. You don't look at what Bob said and you just go.
Ignore me!
You can feel free to not answer this if it feels like too much of a personal question, but I was just wondering that as someone who identifies as a Christian, did it feel at all weird to be sort of playing with figures in someone else's pantheon for writing this episode?
Reword that for me, Grace. I'm not really sure I follow.
Did it feel weird to be playing, playing probably isn't the right word, to be writing characters that were part of someone else's religious system of beliefs at some point?
No, not at all.
Hey.
Not a bit. It's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's fiction, and it's for the purpose of entertainment and thought provoking, you know, compelling drama and pathos. And I have absolutely no problem with that. You know, it's like I remember you guys when Star Wars first came out, and a lot of Christian organizations were up in arms because they were all militant about, not all of them now, let's be fair.
Right.
But some of them were all militant about this concept of the Force. And they're like, this is just trying to replace God with this all-powerful force. They call it the Force and blah, blah, blah. And I remember thinking, guys, it's a freaking movie, for crying out loud. It's not designed to build your life on. It's made for entertainment.
Only now we've got this guy who you do the Jedi religious thing.
And then even in my voice acting career, you know, playing a character like Edward Elric in Full Metal Alchemist, who is clearly agnostic at very best and atheist at worst. And people are like, how could you play a character like that when you're such a devoted Christian? Well, that's easy. I'm an actor. I was playing a role.
It's called acting.
Yeah, exactly. It's called acting. I'm not the character I play. I'm playing the character, you know? And just because I play a bad guy doesn't mean I'm a bad guy.
Wait, it doesn't? Oh.
Nope, okay. It doesn't. I know.
We only have villains on this show, Vic.
It's kind of our niche, so
you know, it's like I tell people when we have this discussion, whenever this comes up in a Q&A session or anything in a public forum, I'll say, you know, kids, even in church plays, even when your church puts on an Easter play, somebody has to play Judas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's true, yeah.
You know, for the sake of the story, you have to have these characters represented. And, you know, this guy that you're, you know, this good old, wonderful, kind, gentle man who's been a member of the church for 20 years playing Judas, he's not really Judas. He didn't betray Jesus. He's playing the character for the sake of the story.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's what I tell people when they ask me questions about that. I know what I believe as a Christian.
Okay.
And it would be very shallow and tenuous if it was able to be rocked by, you know, by just, you know, playing a character in a story or something like this. No, it doesn't bother me at all, Grace.
Okay.
Didn't bother me at all.
Once again, wondering, sorry if that was too personal.
Not at all. Did I shy away from answering?
I think you grabbed it by the horns and just like wrestled that beast to the ground. I think it's
I appreciate the question because I know that there are people out there that may have that question and would never get the chance to ask it. But I love telling imaginative stories.
Mm-hmm.
I have always been a fan of sci-fi and fantasy, and it doesn't change what I believe about God or who I am in relationship to him. But I love telling imaginative stories. Star Trek was one of the first things that inspired me to that. And then after that, it was Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica and on it goes. But I keep it all in the proper context.
Good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, Grace, I'm glad you asked that question. And Vic, I'm glad that you gave us such a comprehensive answer, because I've always felt like one of the things Star Trek should be about is the acceptance of, you know, of all different kinds of faiths and beliefs.
Yeah. Right. Very good.
So,
yeah.
I think that was very well said.
Yes.
All right.
I myself has many times had to persuade various people that there are, in fact, Jewish values in Star Trek, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, there's the Vulcan hand salute.
Oh, yeah. You can't beat that.
That's true.
All right.
Yeah.
So I think we'll have to wrap this up, since we don't want to keep Vic too long, since he does have other things to do with his time. He's a busy guy. He's got Star Trek.
Well, I sure love talking with you guys, though, and I appreciate you taking the time to...
It's a pleasure having you again, Vic.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Are we going to see you at an event sometime soon?
Goodness, I hope so.
Grace, did you guys...
What do you got going on in the Seattle area?
Well, now, did you guys come to see me at SoccerCon?
I was there. I was a SoccerCon.
If I had known you were going to be there.
Oh, my gosh. You guys.
I have poor college student syndrome. What can I say?
Oh, my gosh. What a bunch of lame excuses.
As the normal individual in this trio of failure. I was at SoccerCon is what was there. But even then, I was actually dragged along by my fiance, who is a huge anime fan and such, and still to this day is awestruck at the fact that she was staying next to me while I was talking to you.
Yeah, you're giving us all geek cred, Vic.
Well,
I was like, Megan, this is Vic Mignogna. She's like, hi.
Well, listen, I'm looking very forward to meeting the other two.
Yes.
Sometime soon. So,
Any chance you'll be at Star Trek Las Vegas this year?
Well, you know what? It's funny you should mention that, because I actually had a conversation today with the convention chairman of that event. I am not going to be there because I'm going to be at another event that weekend.
Oh.
I'm already booked at another event, but I am planning on some of our cast being there and having some kind of a presence there.
I will definitely say hi to them.
Please do.
Yeah.
Please do. I know Larry Nemechek, who plays Dr. McCoy, will be there. I'm almost 100% sure Chris Dewin, who plays Scotty, will be there. I think some of our production people will be going out. Ralph Miller, our head of sound production and mixing and design and all that, will be there. I'm not sure who else, but I definitely want us to have a bit of a presence there.
I do want to squeeze in one question here real quick before we kind of run out of time and such. Mm-hmm. You were mentioning available tours for like the studio and checking out the Enterprise and stuff. Is that still a thing that's on track?
Yes.
Is that a thing you guys have figured out?
Yeah, let me answer that. What I would say is keep checking back regularly at StarTrekContinues.com. Check back there regularly. I've been speaking with the other partners. There are four of us in total. And we have been talking about, you know, the extreme amount of interest from people in touring the sets. And so we want to get something in place and set up for that purpose. We're going to do it. It's just been a matter of, you know, everybody sitting down and doing it and, you know, and like hammering out the details I think what we're probably going to do is we're going to have a sign-up area on the Star Trek Continues website.
You got to take a number to visit the Enterprise?
Well, no, you don't have to take a number, but what we'll do is we'll have certain days set aside each month that you can sign up to take a tour on that day. And then we'll have some of our local guys down there on hand to conduct the tours. And that's the way we'll probably do it. So, like, for instance, we'll have a tab that says tours or tour the sets, and you click on it and it'll say July 9th, 15th, 23rd. And if you want you and your family or you and your buddy or whatever want to go and tour, you would put your name down under July 9th, two people, your name and his name or whatever, your family and their names, how many people. And then there will most likely be a charge, you know, a donation charge. And then the guy who is conducting the tours on the 9th of July will go onto the website and go, oh, okay, Grace and her two friends are going to be taking the tour. And, you know, and they'll know who's going to be showing up on what days to tour the facility. And you'll be able to take pictures of everything and take pictures sitting in the captain's chair and standing on the transporter platform and everything. So,
sweet. I know now I have a reason to go to Florida. I didn't think I would hear myself saying that.
Well, there you go. And it's right on the it's right on the highway to Disney. So the city that it's in is right on the path to on the interstate to Disney. So
all right. Well, then.
So when am I going to get a chance to talk to Chris?
Chris Doohan?
Yeah. No, really. I think it would be really cool to get some of the other actors, you know, and even the production crew, like, on the show, you know, if they're not already doing interviews and stuff.
Wonderful. Why don't you drop me an email, and I will send you a few people's emails, and you can contact them directly and set something up. How about that?
That works.
Sounds like a plan.
I like it.
Righty.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Vic, for being on our show again. It was an excellent time.
Thank you, guys.
So I think with that, we will call this episode to a close. And this is All Things Trek signing off.